Felix, can you hear me?
I can.
Yes, I can.
Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure my mic is working.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Honor you, protect the citizens of our communities, and more than anything else, to bring glory to your name. We ask all of this in your precious name. Amen.
Amen.
Commissioner Haas, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call.
Commissioner Felix Lopez.
Here.
Commissioner Hess.
Here.
Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Here. Approval of the agenda.
No changes to the agenda. No, there's no changes to the agenda, Commissioner.
Entertain a motion, please.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. On behalf of Los Angeles County Board of County Commissioners, we'd like to welcome you who are attending this evening's work session. The purpose of this meeting is to give an opportunity for Colorado Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, Mrs. Christy Coleman, Los Angeles County Emergency Manager, Kim Chavez, as well as Los Angeles Huerfano County Department of Public Health Director, Kim Gonzalez, a forum to discuss the issues of the COVID-19 pandemic that is occurring and how of each of these different agencies collaborate together. Now that the state of Colorado, Los Angeles County, and many other municipalities in Los Angeles County have issued emergency declarations, I would ask that we all mute our phones and or computers at all times until we open up the question and answer portion of the agenda. At that time, the Board of County Commissioners will proceed in alphabetical order to ask our county municipality mayors if they have any questions to ask the panel, and also if any council members of that municipality to ask questions as well. We would ask the mayors of each municipality to call on their council members in their appropriate order to ask questions to the panel. We'd also like to express to everyone that this work session is to be conducted in a professional manner and that this session's intent is to be informational to all community leaders to pass on to your community members. We would also ask to please be respectful to the panel and keep your questions focused on COVID-19. If you have any questions for the Board of County Commissioners, we would ask that you call our County Administrator, Mr. Dorenkamp, during business hours. Since enacting a declaration of emergency for Los Angeles County, there are proper protocols and statutes that the Board of County Commissioners must adhere to, and he can direct those questions to the appropriate public information officer to give a response. The Board of County Commissioners would like to thank Mrs. Coleman, Mrs. Chavez, and Mrs. Gonzalez for all their hard work and efforts during this time of crisis, and also extend a sincere thank you and appreciation to their staff and coworkers for all the amazing work they have done to protect our communities. With that said, we will move on to Mrs. Gonzalez with the Health Department.
Thank you, Commissioner Lopez. Thank you, everybody, for joining the work session today. This is Kim Gonzalez, the Los Angeles Huerfano County's District Health Department Public Health Director. I'm just going to give you a little update. We do a daily updates Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. with all of our local partners to keep everybody apprised as to what new orders come out, what public health is doing, what the case counts are, whether it's state, local, U.S., across the county lines, worldwide. So going forward, the state of Colorado has estimated that there is anywhere from 65,000 to 75,000 total number of COVID cases in Colorado that have not been captured by testing. This is anywhere from 1.1% to 1.3% of the total population of Colorado. So if we look at this locally between our two counties, Huerfano County has an approximate population of 6,600. That would be an average of 72 to 85 citizens that have potentially had COVID at this time. We still have approximately 65,000 that could still be potentially infected, or 6,500, sorry. Los Angeles County has a population of approximately 15,000. If we are saying we have an estimate of 156 to 184 total citizens, with that estimate that have been potentially affected at this time, we are still looking at a potential of 14,000 that still could be affected by COVID-19. Moving on, let's look at our local hospitals. Mount San Rafael Hospital has two ICU beds with a capacity of 4 ventilators. Spanish Peaks Regional Health Center has 7 ICU beds with a capacity of 2 ventilators. If you have 5 patients that are hospitalized in a county, that will max out the capacity. We have to remember that our hospitals are not just seeing COVID patients at this time. They are still seeing a lot of patients with other diseases that take up those ICU beds or those ventilators, as well as the PPE. The state has been working towards alternate care sites. The closest alternate care site that we have to both Los Angeles or Huerfano County would be St. Mary Corwin. That is in the process of being converted to an alternate care site. We have to think there that that is not just for our 2 counties, that is going to also include Pueblo, Fremont, Los Animas, Huerfano, and additional counties outside of there. We, between the 2 counties, we do not have enough testing capability for everybody that has shown symptoms or that is asymptomatic. We are currently, as of this morning on our report out, Mount San Rafael gave a report out that they still have 69 PCR tests, which are the tests that go to the state lab. Spanish Peaks has 46 left of the PCR that go to the state lab. Testing is only being done for those at high risk or that fall into that tiered guidance from CDPHE or CDC. The health department was able to receive a point of care machine from Abbott through CDPHE. We are very fortunate to be one of those 12 sites in Colorado that was selected. With that machine, we only did receive 48 tests at this time. So that did increase our capacity a little bit. This machine is the rapid test that actually can detect within 15 to 20 minutes. We did pass this on to Mount San Rafael Hospital. They have a policy in place with Spanish Peaks Regional Healthcare Center to work with testing capacity between the 2 entities. They have done some of the testing already between the 2 sites, and it's working great. So we do have that in place, which is a good win for our communities. But we still need to look forward. Moving on with PPE, personal protective equipment. We need that equipment to be able to do the testing. We also need that equipment to be able to have in those people out in the field that are those first responders. We have placed many orders through WebEOC. We have been trying to work with private entities. We're getting stuff on back ordered. We're getting stuff that we can't even order. We did receive 3 shipments of the Strategic National Stockpile from the state, which was a federal stockpile. Very, very limited supplies that had to be distributed between 2 counties. It was not enough for what the hospitals needed. We are going to continue to try and track down isolation gowns, gloves, N95s, face shields, hand sanitizer, and more of the items needed to help address the pandemic. To date, we actually did receive some face shields that we have worked with the University of Denver and Make COVID Colorado. We have started to get those distributed to the hospitals and the 2 counties. We have started to see some gloves coming in from a private vendor that we have ordered from. Most of the other supplies are in back order, or the order you can't even put in because it's not available. We are hearing from the state that they're working on getting what we need. They have an innovative response team working on supplies across the nation, working on supplies with the feds. There's other entities that are trying to work on supplies. They are having problems on trying to get supplies. States are outbidding states. Supplies that they think are reputable are not coming in. They're fake orders. These supplies, when they do come in, have to be vetted, have to make sure that they are the quality before they can be paid for by the state. To date, there is no supplies coming down. We heard from the governor yesterday or this week that there's 150,000 tests available for Colorado. We are not sure what that entails. We don't know if it's the full testing kit, if it's just the tubes, or is it actually what we need, the swabs and the viral media transport? We have no idea. We don't have that communication. So then you have to also think, if you have that 150,000 that is coming, what is the distribution between each county? You have 64 counties in Colorado. We know that rural Colorado doesn't always get what they need. And especially during this time, we see more urban getting the needs than the rural communities. So these are all key factors of what we need to think about for our safety of our communities. Public health needs to be very innovative on how we protect our communities. We're faced with how this looks like coming back from a stay-at-home order and how different this looks in each county, across county lines and across the state line. Not all counties are at the same point with testing supplies and capacity across the state. And that's one thing we have to all take into consideration when we are lifting restrictions. I have been working very closely with my CALPO board, which is Colorado Association of Local Public Health Officials, as well as the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment Executive Director. We have been working with evidence-based, data-driven best practices, public health approach on how to relax the stay-at-home orders with other limitations commencing and social activity. We've looked at many different documents that are state, national, and federal. We are trying to come up with a framework that lays out specific indicators that, if completely met, could lead communities to consider degrees of reopening. There are many different approaches in reopening, and there are many crucial triggers as well as conditions of the communities that we can evaluate the critical businesses and the readiness for the phasings of reopening. For example, some of those would be a sustained decrease in cases at least 14 days. Can hospitals safely, are they able to treat patients without resorting to the crisis standards of care, which is going to that site in Pueblo? Can testing be performed for all people with symptoms consistent of COVID-19 infection? Actively monitoring and accomplished for COVID-19 cases and contacts. Is there a clear protocol in place that requires social distancing and assistance with ease with identification? While guidance and detail will need to be created and agreed on upon some of these protocols with the approach, we can address the immediate needs in getting a plan in place to begin relaxing the stay-at-home orders while giving public health the opportunity to research and develop guidance that is meaningful and widely applicable across all counties and across our two counties and remains protective of the public's health. Moving on, we all have heard this past week that the governor has been shifting towards the stay-home phase to the stay safer at home. His timeline of implementation is the stay home order will be lifted on April 26th. He's looking at retail industry going in and getting ready on April 27th. May 1st, he is looking at implementing best practices for retail and some personal services. May 4th, he's looking at implementing best practices of office and reduced density telecommuting still. Locally, we still have a public health order which goes to April 30th of the stay-at-home order, which is in line with the governor's order 2022 of the critical business. We understand that we cannot stay closed due to the economy and the workforce. Public health is tasked with what we can do until we have surveillance in place. We are trying to move forward and understand the impacts of both sides. The health department is trying to get necessary guidance in place that will have the least impact on our communities. That is why we need that additional few days to get our businesses ready. An example would be working with an industry that the governor is looking at lifting guidance on, a dental industry. Some of those key protocols that need to be in place include proper personal protective equipment, N95 isolation gowns, or lab coats in between patients, hand sanitizer, hand washing stations, one-on-one patients in and out, very extensive cleaning after each patient, signage for both the staff as well as the patients so they know what they each can expect. This is just an example of a detailed protocol that will need to be in place for each industry that does have a soft reopening. I don't think all of us understand what this is going to entail for some of these industries like that. PPE is not available for those dentist office or those key people that are face-to-face and putting themselves on the front lines like the healthcare system now. As we move forward, we will continue to notify our partners and our community members as we go forward with the guidance as through public health. And we thank you all for being on the call today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Gonzalez. We'll move forward now with Ms. Christy Coleman, our Regional Emergency Manager update.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you, first of all, for inviting me to speak. And I just want to give a huge kudos to Kim Gonzalez and all of the local public health directors out there working side by side with them. I say that virtually side by side, I guess, across the region, and then being on so many different state calls. It's amazing the hard work that they're doing and the tough position that they're in. You know, it doesn't matter if they go one, they're going to make half of the people mad one way or the other on which direction that they go. And I truly appreciate that position and have really watched a lot of these local public health directors under a lot of pressure. So starting with that, she's doing a great job. So I'm Christy Coleman. I'm the South Region Field Manager for DHSEM, which is Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, which is the division under CDPS for the state of Colorado. I cover Pueblo, Fremont, Custer, Huerfano, and Los Animas counties. Prior to that, I was the emergency manager for Custer County for 10 years. So I've been in emergency management for 15 years collectively. So pretty familiar with all the ins and outs, and I've worked through a lot of different disasters. Just like everyone else, this is my first pandemic, and it's really interesting watching everyone learn as we go from the local all the way up to the federal level, the shifting, and just trying to figure it out as we're moving forward. It's very challenging, really by far the most challenging assignment ever. The difference is, you know, you get hit by a hurricane or you get through a wildland fire, you can kind of put a box around it. This is really difficult to put a box on. And we know that we're going to be recovering for a long time. Emergency management, it's broad, it's very broad. And I've done a 402 up there, which is an elected and appointed officials workshop, and they're really valuable, and we can really get into depth with what emergency management is. And I'm just going to do just an overview on that kind of for you tonight and talk a little bit about what we've been doing and then take questions too. But it's very broad, and we work, I guess, the pillars of emergency management to start there. It's planning, preparing, mitigating, responding to, and recovering from a disaster. So, you know, all the plans from during peacetime, we're developing all the plans. And emergency management really hangs its hat on the emergency operations plan. That's the county plan. That's mandated by state statute that we have a county emergency management plan and a county emergency management program. So then you build out from that. The state statute's pretty vague beyond that, but those mandates are there. So that's what we do constantly. This is the program that is put together so everyone else doesn't have to worry about when the sky is falling, because that's what this job does day to day, is worrying about the worst case scenarios that could happen and creating plans. And by preparing, that encompasses training and exercising and equipping all the responders and elected officials, policy groups, building stakeholders. So talks through the plans and making sure everyone's planning together. It's a constant cycle. Once we have a plan done, then we bring everybody together and we do some training around that plan. And then we exercise the plan, whether that's sitting around a table and we talk through some worst case scenarios, and then we or it's one where we're actually moving fire trucks or whatever it is that, you know, that you've exercised on. And we have done pandemic exercises. The public health department works with those pandemic exercises and functional exercises, full scale exercises, where we've done the flu shot, the flu clinics, where we've actually moved vaccine and given mass amounts of vaccine to people through those exercises. So that's all kind of part of that. And emergency management is a support function. Emergency managers are generally not the incident commander. So like for a pandemic, incident command falls to public health, and the emergency manager works to support that local public health partner. And then we also talk a lot about consequence management. So consequence management is the piece that is everything else. So you've got the incident, whatever it is. If it's a fire and you've got the firefighters, they're fighting the fire. Well, what are the other things that are impacted? In a pandemic, you've got the public health department is your lead agency dealing directly with the pandemic. And then the consequences are so many other things that touch that. And so we build to support that public health. And you can imagine one of the domino effects from this, we already know, is the economy. And so what's going to happen with that? So we're already working towards recovery. And we work with a lot of different agencies, DOLA being one that we work with hand in hand, especially as we move into short-term and long-term recovery. So my job at the state is, the state is broken into nine regions. We're actually moving to 10 regions here very shortly. But this region has the five counties that I talked about. And my job is to support the local emergency management programs in those five counties. And be a liaison to the state emergency management, our headquarters, which is in Centennial. So providing training, providing exercising, providing planning, support, and coordination. And then during disaster, a lot of times I'll be in an EOC, an emergency operations center. This is kind of different too. We have virtual emergency operations centers. So we're not all together, you know, working to solve a problem, which has created complexities in itself. You know, the virtual world is not ideal for problem solving always. But I think we're adapting and we're doing well. All the communities are doing a great job with that. Some EOCs are open, so there are some. Pueblo has theirs open. Really, Pueblo is the only one in the region that has a active in-person EOC, and they're implementing masks and their social distancing as well. Custer's kind of doing a limited one where they have it open and they just have a couple people in there. Most everyone else, definitely everybody else in the South region is virtual with their emergency operations center. So that's where you would work hand in hand with those partners. Some counties have chosen to do a unified command. So we get into kind of the incident management lingo and incident management skills, I guess, and that's what the state has done. In our level, we have the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management has brought the CDPHE into the State Emergency Operations Center, and they're working in unified command on all the problem sets. And you can imagine how complex and how many different problems there are. One of them that we're working on right now is the St. Mary Corwin alternate care site that Kim mentioned in Pueblo. And that's building out the old part of St. Mary Corwin, the kind of decommissioned part of that, into a functioning alternate care, or it's kind of like a med surge. It's got a little different characteristics as a COVID, but that's one of the things that we're working on. And Kim is exactly right. It's the only one that the state is going to do in this area. So it'll cover all of the southeast part of Colorado, as well as southern Colorado, or the south region here. Some of the communities are building their own alternate care sites. It's kind of starting to scale down as the numbers, we're not seeing the numbers spike as much as some of the models showed initially. So with that, there's a little bit of a scale back in some of the development. And we really feel like the five alternate care sites that we have around the state are sufficient right now to support a peak if we were to see one, and those will hold in place as we, you know, move forward and potentially see a second wave and so forth. So that's, we're not going to stop building those out. They're going to continue to build out. St. Mary Corwin will be online to start taking patients. The target date is May 24th. So we're still a little ways out from that, but we're fine. You know, Parkview and St. Mary Corwin now are holding fine, and plus our other hospitals in the region. And if we needed to expedite it and push it forward, we could do that. One of the other things we're working on is the non-congregant and congregant sheltering for the high-risk populations, specifically homeless populations. If we start to see symptomatic people in the homeless populations, being able to give them a place to be isolated so that that doesn't spread through that population. And also, you know, not a shelter maybe where they would go to right now that would be in place. So that's something that's being built out. And local jurisdictions have the opportunity to build those out as well. Those all fall under reimbursement eligibility under the Public Assistance Program, which is a FEMA Public Assistance Program. I can speak in detail about, but I would really suggest that anybody that's interested in really wanting to talk with the true subject matter experts on it, the guys that do this day in and day out, that your workshop is Monday the 27th, and Kim Chavez has sent out that information about that workshop. And I really encourage anyone, special districts, municipalities, counties, nonprofit, it's kind of a really narrow window of nonprofits being eligible for this. They have to be doing either an educational or a medical function. And there was one other piece in there too. And they have to be working directly with the local government. So it's not quite as broad as we've seen in some of the other disasters. There are no thresholds for this. Under PA, generally before, we're always talking about a community has to meet a minimum threshold before they'll be eligible. When this was given presidential disaster status, that basically they did a blanket status approval across the entire country. So you're already in as your counties and municipalities are already in, and then there's a process to apply. And the big thing with that is documenting. But again, I would recommend that you be on that phone call on the 27th. Last thing that we're working on as well is ambulance. We have a state contract for ambulances specifically to transfer COVID patients from one place to another. And that's through AMR, but it's specifically for COVID and under a state contract. Those are being dispatched out of our headquarters in Denver, but we're able to dispatch them anywhere across the state to help alleviate the pressure on the local ambulance departments and companies that are out there. I could go into the role of emergency management a little bit more. I said that's kind of in that 402 class. I could definitely go into that and what that looks like and the roles and responsibilities of emergency management. Not sure how you'd want me to do that, but maybe we'll just keep that for a question and answer time if you have any questions about how that works. But I work really closely with Kim Chavez and she's as a part-time emergency manager. So it's working with her program and planning. And I know she's been working with Kim Gonzalez. We are on multiple calls. I'm on multiple calls daily, usually 5 or 6 a day between state and the counties I cover in my team that I work with. So that's about it in a nutshell, I guess.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Coleman.
I hope I haven't been on mute this whole time.
No, we heard you. We heard you fine. Thank you so much. Next, we'll hear from Kim Chavez, our local emergency manager, her update. Kim?
Okay. Good evening, everybody. Like Louis said, I'm Kim Chavez. I have been with Los Angeles County for 28 years, and I've been the emergency manager for 8 years. And I'm just going to give a little rundown of what I've been doing in conjunction with Christy Coleman and DHSEM and Kim Gonzalez with the Health Department. Daily situational awareness reports have been going out via WebEOC and email, resource ordering and tracking via WebEOC to track everything that's been requested and needed. Capability to register stakeholders to the WebEOC, they handed that down to the emergency managers now. So if you get locked out of your WebEOC or you want to be registered to be able to look at WebEOC, we have several different classes for training as well. We're not doing them right now because of the pandemic, but we will open those back up as soon as we can. Stakeholders who don't want to be on the WebEOC itself can still receive the notifications via email. Again, just supporting, coordinating, communicating with public health pretty much on a daily basis. Participating in the regional weekly feeding calls, getting updates on local feeding needs and the gaps that we have there. Regional weekly EM calls with our counterparts in our region. Participating in daily calls, webinars, as Christy said, we've got a ton going on, so that takes up a lot of our time. Following up on grant updates and the possibilities of getting grants for our different entities and for the county itself. Been in talks with our county coroner about mass fatality planning and other things about what we were going to do. Alternate care site planning, first we began thinking locally, then we moved it out to a more regional plan. Recovery planning, we have to discover, is there a need to hire a recovery manager locally, or would we do that regionally? We spoke a little bit with Tara Marshall with DOLA on that yesterday. Like Christy said, we've offered the 402 class. We will offer that again. I usually try to do that right after an election has happened, since a lot of times we have new members coming in, whether they're city, county, or however that may be. Field daily calls, emails from the public. Usually try to answer the questions. If I can't answer them, I send them off to the public health if it's something that they can answer better than I can. Pushing out daily information to the public and staff via email and social media. Right now, our EOC is activated virtually. I have two staff, myself and Paula, again, working virtually, trying to get things put together there. Created a county COOP for Los Angeles County. It's in draft form, has not been adopted by our board. Also waiting for the other elected officials to jump on board with that and give us their piece of it. Our county EOP has several different pieces, specific hazard assignments, explanation of each department's requested duties per hazard. Pertaining to this pandemic specifically, we have ESF 14, which talks about long-term recovery and mitigation. ESF 8 talks about public health and medical services, their role in it. ESF 5 is my role, emergency management, and it has what I'm expected to do. And then we have an incident annex, which is the continuity of government, which goes hand in hand with the COOP. I also have an updated list of ESF leads from 1 to 16, which consists of city and county folks and other stakeholders, including fire. And if anybody would like a copy of our EOP, we can send out the base is all to stakeholders. And then again, as Christy said, we have the public assistance webinar on 4/27 at 1:30. If anybody needs that, just please let me know and we can push that back out there. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mrs. Chavez. I'd also like to state that we have our state representative, Richard Holtorf, on the line tonight. Nicole, thank you for joining us, representative. And now we'll move forward to the question and answer portion. Like I mentioned in my opening comments, we will go alphabetically, and we'll start with the town of Aguilar. Do we have Mayor Piano on the line or representative from Aguilar? And you might have to star 6 to unmute if you are on the call. Okay, moving down the line to town of Branson, Mayor Schneider, are you or anyone represented from the city on the call? Okay, the town of Coakdale, Mayor Gilmore, are you or any representatives on the call? Okay, the town of Kim, Mayor Bros, are you on the call or any representatives from the city of Kim? Okay, thank you. The town of Starkville, Mayor Carlisle, are you or any members on the call? Okay, town of Trinidad, Mayor Phil Rico, or any members of City Council, are you on the call, Mayor?
Yeah, I'm on, and like I said, I have no comment at this time, but Luis, I probably need to have either a sit down or a conference call with you separately on a different platform. There's some stuff I need to speak to you about.
That's fine. We can get together tomorrow, Mayor. Any questions from your City Council?
I'm Erin Ogletree, City Council member. I don't have any questions. I'll defer to the mayor. Thanks. But I appreciate the information.
Okay, anyone else from the City of Trinidad? Very well. Thank you all for the information that you gave out today, Kim, Christy, and Kim. I also want to recognize the Huerfano County Commissioners for being on the call tonight as well. Thank you, Huerfano County, for your support for our health district and our health departments, and we'll be conversating with you tomorrow as well, I'm sure. So thank you, everyone. At this time, Luis, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Oh, go ahead.
Luis, it's Kim Chavez. Yes. Just want to let you know that the town of Coakdale chatted in. They have a microphone that's not working, and they have no questions, but they want to let you know they're on.
Oh, good. Welcome, Coakdale. Well, having said that, if we have nothing else, we have any questions from the public maybe out there.
Before you adjourn, this is Representative Holtorf.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. And thanks to everybody for continuing to work through this very difficult time. At the state level, there's a lot of concern, as you might imagine. We still don't have a time for the General Assembly to reconvene. Tentatively, they're talking about the middle of May. One of the things that's that's been a lot of discussion about is the CARES funding that's coming from the federal government to the state, and then also from the state down to the counties and municipalities. What I think we need to do, particularly at your level with Las Animas, Huerfano, and also the municipalities of all the cities you mentioned, Aguilar, Branson, Coakdale, Kim, Starkdale, Trinidad, is begin now identifying the specific COVID-19 impact and costs that we're incurring in our towns and our counties. The allocation of these funds is going to be a dynamic process, and it hasn't even been determined clearly at the federal level nor at the state level, and may not actually get done until the General Assembly reconvenes in the middle of May. Although the JVC and others are working towards trying to figure out budgeting, and both the Democrat caucus and the Republican caucus are in discussions to talk about what the way ahead will be. I would ask that you start identifying those now and track those out as time goes along. And then also find the most important and critical expenses so we can begin talking about what the reimbursements and what the cost shares and what these things need to be. When we get back to the state legislature, I need to hear from you folks as to what those are so I can get busy with telling my colleagues in the General Assembly that we need to focus on A, B, C, D, and E. And these things need to support 1, 2, 3, and 4, and 5, hospitals, district hospitals, clinics, all those, even lost revenue from executive directives or things that have impacted both counties and municipalities. Those things need to be captured so we can go and fight for the compensation that's out there, or the reimbursements that are out there. There's no priority to date. No one knows. The economic impact is going to be huge. So we need to try to get our head and hands around that. And I'm going to need your help to work in that direction. And that's just my biggest point. There's still a lot of questions out there. Thank you.
Representative Holtorf, Commissioner Felix Lopez, thank you so much for being on the phone call. Just for your information, I sit on the board of Colorado Counties Incorporated, and we put a somewhat of a spreadsheet in conjunction. We want to send that over to, of course, you and our delegations. We feel that the 1.67, however many, $1.7 billion that were designated through the CARES Act should make the way down to all the counties. And we have worked some of the numbers. Be more than glad to share that information with you to CCI.
I would appreciate that so I can work towards pointing that out when I get back to the Capitol to try to help us get that allocation. And that's going to be difficult. It's going to turn into a food fight, I'm pretty sure, when we get back to the Capitol, and I need to make sure that you all are well represented.
Hey, Luis, this is Mayor Rico. I have one final comment, if I may.
Yes, Mayor.
You know, I see that there's, you know, 44 people on the line right now, and just to let everybody know that one thing that the City of Trinidad has done to help our community out is from our cannabis fund from our first quarter. We have allocated $500,000 back to our community to different areas such as the council, government's health department, hospital, and a couple of just people in general that have been that have lost their jobs due to the COVID-19. So just to let you know that we have been very fortunate and been able to do this, and we're proud to do it.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor, and thank City Council for doing that for us and the community that we serve and you serve. Thank you so much. Is there anything else from anyone in the public that would have any questions for our panelists at this time? And again, thank you all for joining us tonight. And thanks again to our teams that are working very difficult, and everybody. This is very, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Mr. Lopez, my name is Carol Dillo. I am a resident of Trinidad and a business owner in the city of Trinidad. I have a couple of questions to ask. I believe it's Kim Gonzalez, our local health department, and also some respectful comments to make to all of you. First off, how many actual COVID-19 cases to date have we had in Los Angeles County? And I'm waiting
for you. We have had a total of 3 positive cases in Los Angeles and 1 positive in Huerfano.
Okay. All right. To date. Okay, out of 15,000 residents, okay? Now, I heard a lot of planning around what ifs. And as a business owner I interpreted that as the glass is half empty, okay? Now, I would like to respectfully remind all you government employees that you're still collecting a paycheck. But private employers and those independent contractors, they are not. And you're keeping the county closed for possible future cases is jeopardizing the overall well-being and health of the average citizen in Los Angeles County. And when you only have three cases, I would respectfully ask you to think hard whether you're making those decisions to keep private industry closed and not allowing the citizens to use their good judgment and their ability to take care of their families is really representing the people as honestly and fairly as you possibly can.
Your comments are appreciated. Thank you. Anyone else?
Luis, do you mind if I have Rob Bukovac here, if you would like us to respond on that?
Please do.
My emergency preparedness and response coordinator.
Yeah.
Okay. For the last person who made a comment, and I understand, and we all understand, this is a trying time, and we, you know, everybody wants to get back to work, and everybody wants to open their businesses and get back to work and earn a paycheck and all that. And we feel for you. We wish we could just open this back up as well. But the thing that we have to understand is this is a governor's order. This isn't a Los Angeles and Huerfano County District Health Department order. This is an order that comes direct from the governor's office. So whether we had zero cases or 1,000 cases here, we still have to follow the governor's guideline, and we have to follow his orders. And he's the one that actually...
Respectfully, the governor released it as of April 27th. You have chosen to extend it through April 30th.
Okay, so the governor just didn't open up the economy totally on the 26th. What he did do is he said that he would allow curbside service on the 26th through May 1st. And then on May 1st, when all the guidelines are put in place and all the precautions have been taken, then he would allow with certain guidelines, he would allow businesses to reopen. And that, those guidelines are social distancing, hand washing, wearing masks and gloves, and those types of things. Limited number of people in stores and shops, and making sure everybody stays 6 feet apart. And so with those things, and so we're not extending anything beyond what the governor has already, is already in place through the governor's office.
Well, respectfully, I don't believe you are giving the population of Los Angeles County and Huerfano County the benefit of the doubt to be hardworking, and all business owners are willing to observe those guidelines. They just want to get open, okay? They want to be able to support their families. I mean, and every day you extend these restrictions, you are you are devastating members of this community and businesses.
Ma'am, you're out of line.
Why am I out of line? Excuse me.
Your comments are now ended. Thank you. Any other comments from the community members? Entertain a motion to adjourn.
Hey, Luis?
Yes.
How is she out of line?
Please identify yourself.
This is H.L. Bowman, the vice chair of the Republican Party.
This is not the place for the forum to be discussed. We mentioned at the beginning of this meeting that there are certain statutes that the county commissioners must heed by during the EOC, the EOP that we have in place. That is where those questions need to be asked, not here to the panel on this. It's for emergency management, And her question was answered. It was by the governor, and then she went on to belittle our staff. That's how she was out of line. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Luis.
Luis, Lee Phelan, sorry that I wasn't able to jump in there earlier. I'm a little bit technically challenged trying to figure out which mute button I had pushed there. I'd just like to have a question. I know there's these conference calls with all the government officials and stuff like that, and obviously we live in a unique situation with the remoteness of Los Animas as well. Huerfano County, you know, when it comes to the Chamber of Commerce and economic development, that should be out there talking on behalf of the business owners and taking those concerns. Is there a way that there can be some sort of commission, whether it's official or unofficial, to gather people in those positions in those areas to get feedback, to have an understanding? I'm listening as well when it comes to some of the emergency management. I understand the assumptions that they're trying to work on. Personally, you know, I've worked FEMA when I was in the Department of Defense. You know, we start down a path, and it's hard to deviate off of that path, especially when it comes to unique situations such as this pandemic. I mean, a hurricane, people done it a million times. A tornado is the same thing. And I'm listening to numbers. I'm listening to expectations, which were probably the original assumptions. Understanding original assumptions were, you know, weeks in the making, not years in the making, with this pandemic. But data is changing, and just to get feedback from some of the business as well as other community leaders that are out there that typically can't come onto these calls and aren't being represented from a chamber or ED or something like that. Is there some other forum for those people to voice those issues?
Yes, that's a very good question, Mr. Phelan. There is already emergency operation plan in place for that exactly to happen through our municipalities. I'm not sure if the city of Trinidad has enacted their EOP or have a working active emergency manager at that time, but that's how it works, is through that Office of Emergency Management to the liaison to the city of Trinidad through their office. But to answer that question better for you, please contact Mr. Dorenkamp tomorrow and Kim Chavez, and they can help you out with that answer.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mr. Phelan.
Luis, this is Phil Rico. I was going to tell Daryl Phelan, if he wants to call me tomorrow at 680-0719, I may be able to explain the Trinidad side.
Mr. Phelan, also Commissioner Felix Lopez, thank you for attending the phone call. We have, and absolutely correct, I hear that, we have the chamber representative, Nisha Crossan, that attends this meeting on a daily basis and disseminates that information, but somehow we might not be reaching all the business community. And then I want to go back, clarification, to Ms. Phillips, I do believe that the response was that we are within the governor's orders and mandate. That was my understanding, Ms. Phillips, that in that particular, on your question, it is exactly mirroring the mandates from the governor. I hope that clear your question in the response that you were requesting.
Yeah, I think they canceled her off. I know I was part of some earlier conversations with some business owners, and there's assumptions, and in these circumstances is, you know, true or otherwise, stuff happens, you know, that somehow that Los Angeles County was going to be implementing more stringent measures than what the government was offering, and I think that upsetted some people.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? At this time, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Commissioner Hess? Commissioner Hess? Commissioner Hess? Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Thank you, everyone, for your participation tonight, and have a good evening. Bye.